It is Locked On Jazz for the 30th of May. We'll look back on Jay Crowder's season for the Utah Jazz. Look at our first draft prospect, a kid out of Creighton named Khyri Thomas. Brian Colangelo, what have you done in Philadelphia? It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, getting your insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and a look behind the curtains on what's going on with the Utah Jazz. Hope you're well. Thanks very much for tuning in. Jay Crowder, Khyri Thomas, and the NBA 5 for a Wednesday. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Chevy and The Store at 6200 South and 20th East. Quick note, I just thought it was interesting. I was over at the not yesterday's workout, but the day before's. Donovan was there, Royce O'Neal was there, Epe Udo was there. I think Dante's been in town. Pretty cool to have four guys in May hanging around your building. That I think is a testament to what the Jazz have built. I think that's a pretty good sized story, actually, is that they've built something where these guys are spending time around here and want to be around the facility, around the people they work with. I think that's a significant big deal item. All right, let's get to Jay Crowder. The narrative that's out there on Jay Crowder is completely inaccurate to what his season actually was. And the biggest picture to me on Jay Crowder is that I think he will be much, much better with the Utah Jazz next year than he was this year. I think when he begins to understand how Quinn wants him to play and has a chance to go through an offseason and has the exit interview. And I mean, I've literally sat with Jazz coaches as they've talked about ways in which, oh, look at that. When he figures that out, they see a role for Jay Crowder where he's much better than he was for the Jazz in the 27 games he played, and he was really important in those 27 games. But by the way, I keep reading about how, you know, he shot 39% from the field for the Jazz and 42% for Cleveland. He shot 32% from three for the Jazz, 33% for Cleveland. He had a bad three-point shooting season overall. His 39% season in Boston is an outlier that I think a lot of things went his way that way. I don't think that's a true version of who he is. If you look at his effective field goal percentage kind of year in and year out, it's not at that 57% he was. There is, as we kind of go back through him, there's one kind of disconcerting note on him that I think will be important to watch next year. And at 27, I don't think he should be aging, but he has had some leg issues. He had three dunks the entire season. So the year prior, he had 13. The year before that, he had 19. The year before that, he had 13, having played only 57 games. So I don't think that Boston's doing something particularly important that gave him those opportunities. He wasn't getting up, and he didn't finish well at the rim in Utah. And so that's a little, his finishing at the rim for Utah was 64%. It was 68% in Cleveland. It was 74% in Boston the year before, 70% the year before that. That is a little disconcerting because those are the signs of age, signs of something wrong with the lower body, not being able to get up. He didn't have a great elevation at the rim this year. That's the only kind of trepidation I have on anything of why. I'd love to know why that happened. What happened with Jay that those opportunities weren't the same? The other one that was interesting with his time with the Jazz, a lot more unassisted plays. In Cleveland, almost everything was assisted. For the Jazz, went to 77%. And then Boston, that's kind of where he was in Boston. As he tried, you know, he got an opportunity to play with the ball in his hands a little bit more than he did when he was in Cleveland. He did not get that chance at all. The Jazz were great when he was on the floor. They were nearly plus 10 per 100 possessions when he was on the floor. And when he and Rudy were on the floor together, the Jazz were very good. And particularly if you started siphoning out when he was the power forward instead of the small forward. The playoffs were ugly for him, though. 32% shooting from the floor and 33% from three. So the playoffs were not a particularly pretty picture for him. And the rim finishing was stunningly poor during the playoffs. 36% at the rim in the playoffs. It's strange. And so, again, a lot in his assisted possessions went way down, which I think probably happens a little bit in the possessions, and particularly considering who we played. But these are all areas where I think when you look at Jay Crowder's season, I think Jay Crowder is going to be much, much better for the Jazz in next year as he learns how to play their system, as they learn how to use him a little bit more. And I'm pretty excited about what I think he's capable of doing for this team, particularly playing more four than he did three. I think he was better when he did that than when he played in the when he played the three. I thought at times the kind of strength and power that he has gets translated into maybe a heavier leg. His pull-up three game was 25% this year. So that's an area where if he's going to play any three off the bounce, it has to be a little bit better than it was this last year. It was 32% in the playoffs, which is a notch better. And maybe that's all that's realistic. He's not a great, he's not a pure natural shooter. But he's a great addition to who the Jazz are. And I think you'll see him be even better in this upcoming season. The other thing is, he'll play with the ball in his hands a little bit more as he understands the Jazz system. His pick and roll game, which was okay in Boston, was not great for the Utah Jazz. That was an area where I think he didn't know his teammates yet, didn't quite know what was going on. These are just examples, I think, of where, next year he's so much more of a valuable asset to the team going through a training camp, understanding what to do, all of those kind of things. On his pick-and-roll ball handling this last year, when he handled the ball and took a shot, he shot 4 for 31 from the field. That's a little unusual. That doesn't necessarily count where he passed out of it and things of that nature. So we talked about his rim finishing also translated. He was just average transition. He's usually a little bit better than that if you look at his career numbers. And his spot-up shooting, though, was pretty good. For when he gets left open, he's pretty good. He was in the 63rd percentile of spot-up shooting. Unguarded, actually guarded better than unguarded, percentage of the league in that. He is not a great shooter off the bounce. Last year, he shot 24% off shots off the bounce. So, and that's these are just the little things. Jazz development crew will get on, and I think we'll see Jay Crowder improve considerably because of those things. So that's an example of the areas where I think Crowder will be much better. I think he'll understand I think he began to understand the go-and-catch concept a little bit more than he had before. And all of those areas are areas where Jay, I think, will be vastly improved for the Jazz in the next season. And then the biggest question is, how are you using him? That's really the biggest question. So if you go through, and the number that kind of jumps out to me, and this is just becomes a much longer conversation for everything involving the Jazz, because this gets into, what are you doing with Derek Favors? And the Jazz have, as I've said before, the Jazz have proven that they can play Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert together. The question is whether or not that is the best option for them, whether or not they might be better in other minutes. And is Jay Crowder good enough to be your starting four? I'm not sure what I think of that. But when Crowder and Gobert were on the floor together without Derek Favors, okay, so now Crowder's playing the four. And you probably can, and they played 434 minutes together. The offensive rating was 109. The defensive rating was 91. So they were plus 18. This gets into a longer discussion that we'll probably do next week, which is, okay, on the favors front, yes, the Jazz have proven you can play with favors. But are you better other ways? And if I then add in and say, okay, not only is favors off the floor, but Jerebko is off the floor, and I think Tabo was hurt by the time we got Crowder. So I now know that Crowder's playing guaranteed the four. The numbers actually get a little bit better. They're 108 offensive rating and a 92 defensive rating in 351 minutes when Jay Crowder is playing at the four for the Jazz. That's with Derek Favors. That's big time right there. That's big time. Today's show is brought to you in part by my friends over at the store. We are very close to the Locked On store card. I don't know. We have to come up with a name. What do we call it? I think we should just call it Locked On Mudslide Cookies. But we've got to come up with a name. It's going to be a special card for all of you guys that are listeners who stop by the store. And you can pick up special deals. We'll give you more details on it. But it's close. It's coming. We're hopefully getting it done. By the way, they have got new Lollipop Gourmet Cotton Candy. This is a great example of who the store is. So the store is at 6200 South and 20th East, and it's your grocery store. But they're looking out for Utah products. You can feel the impact that Jeff and Scott have when they go and find Utah's own. So whether it's Big Daddy Hill's barbecue sauce, where they have this week for $5.99 each on sale, whether it's the Honest Bitters that Honest John Bitters, which is a local company, whether it's Pop Pickles. I think you've heard me talk about June pies. I'll give you an update on our latest June pie sampling. We are just in love with June pies. But their latest one is Lollipop Gourmet Cotton Candy. And they've got honey and marshmallow and lavender and mint limeade and strawberry lemonade and mango and espresso and birthday cake and tiger's blood. And those are all cotton candies. Pretty fun. Stop by the store. Also, go and make sure you get the back where they've got the food available for you for that lunch that day, or take things home. The pot pies or any of the marinated meats that they already have ready for you. The barbecue chicken is just absolutely fabulous. 6200 South, 20th East. Our latest June pie. June pies, by the way, is a wonderful woman. I don't have any. I've never met her in my life. Just, she seems wonderful because the story's so great. And she, by the way, she seems like she's like, you know, 82 and got her hair up and up. And she's probably like 34 and totally hip. But she's this woman out of Heber who makes pies. It's been always been a big deal in Park City. People are always driving to Heber. Well, they're now at the store. So that's your way you can get them. They're delivered throughout the week. Dinner pies and quiches are only delivered on Friday mornings. Pork tomatillo pie is incredible. We had it for dinner the other day. We tried the berry strudel pie, and that is fabulous as well for a dessert pie. They have those all week long. The lemon sour cream, I think it is the one my wife loves. I don't love that one as much, but she likes the lemon. That is the store, 6200 South, 20th East. All right, I watched my first portion of a player last night. I need to watch him more before I... but just kind of trying to get these guys. His name is Kyrie Thomas. He's 6'3", 205. He's old. He's 22 years old. He played at Creighton. The old thing I am a believer in, by the way, I get nervous about players whose careers get better when they're suddenly 23 or 22 and everybody else is 18. And this guy fits kinda, but not totally. So he played 19 minutes a game as a freshman in the 15-16 season. I think he spent an extra year in high school. He's out of Omaha, Nebraska. And then he went to Fork Union Military Academy. But he shot 42% from three that year. And then the next year he played 31 minutes. And he's scored 12 points a game, and he shot 39% from three. And then last year, he played 32 minutes a night, and he shot 41% from three. And he's pretty interesting. He's 6'3". He's long. I have only watched about a half of him. I got to watch more before I come up with major. I didn't see any elite athleticism. What I saw was a knockdown, fabulous catch-and-shoot shooter. And when you're drafting 21, I think you're trying to find the Reggie Bullocks of the world. You know, and it's taken Reggie Bullock a while. Who is Reggie Bullock? Reggie Bullock is the former 25th pick of the 2013 draft by the Clippers, who kind of last year finally found his groove in Detroit at 26. but he's a career 40% three-point shooter. He shot 45% from three last year. He's 6'7". I like Reggie Bullock. I don't know his status, but if he's available, I think we should look into him. He played at North Carolina, and he wasn't an elite athlete, and so he goes to North Carolina. He spent 3 years there, and by the time he was drafted, I think he was 21 or 22. And it's taken him a little while to find his groove, partially because he was in L.A. and they just didn't play him much, and then he got stuck in Phoenix for 11 games, and then he went to Detroit, and they started playing him a little bit more. And in the last 3 years in Detroit, he's been okay. And last year, he played a lot, and suddenly shooting 45% from three. He's 6'7", and so this is a little different. I didn't see a lot of handle from Thomas. I did see him move the basketball nicely, but he is a knockdown shooter. And you look at some of his numbers, interestingly, in transition, he's great, which tells you he probably has a little bit more athleticism than you think. But in the spot-up shooting, he was 89th percentile in college basketball last year with a 60% effective field goal percentage. On the pick-and-roll, he was not good, according to Synergy, but on the handoff, he was very good. I saw that. He steps behind a handoff, and he can just knock down a shot. His catch-and-shoot game, unguarded, he was in the 53rd percentile. Guarded, he was in the 90th percentile. He had an effective field goal percentage of 65%. He's much better catch and shoot. He is off the bounce. But he can really shoot it. Not a lot of isolation time. Some of this is because of college. There's not enough space to play isolation. He actually has a surprisingly good post-up game. Didn't do a lot of them, but he was really good at it when he did. I saw him try it once in the game against Villanova, against Brunson, who's pretty darn strong. And he faded back and he came up short. I'll have more on him. But it's interesting. He's you're looking for guys at 21 in the draft who have a skill. And then does he have enough other stuff that you can work with him? And so when you look at this kid, there might be some other things to work with because he's 6'3". He's a knockdown shooter. I'd like to see him, as I continue to watch him, handle a little bit better. I would like to see him play in the pick and roll, which I don't think I'm going to see. So that those are the things that would make me feel. But he's long. And so he's long, he's a knockdown shooter, and he seems to be a pretty good defensive player. I watched him against Villanova, who's good. He's ranked 27th, by the way, and he's got a 6'10" wingspan. So he's 6'3", so he's very much got the measurements of Donovan at that point. So he's 6'3" with a 6'10" and a half wingspan. He is, as I mentioned, older. So that's kind of the one. And I think you got. I do believe in that. You got to get nervous. He got better as the season went on. So early in the year, he dropped 22 on Yale and 24 against Northwestern. And then late in the year, he put 22 up against Georgetown. He put 26 up against Marquette. He put 24 against Villanova in the game I'm watching. He had 24 against Marquette. So And the only reason I kind of looked at that is because that's what Donovan did at the end of last year, is that he suddenly started scoring, which he hadn't done before. There was an injury to Villanova late in the season. One of the guys, a kid who just transferred to Denver. So, I don't know. Just keep an eye on him. I think he's interesting. I'll watch him some more. But I would put him in a category. I was pretty intrigued. I'd say, thinking for a 21st pick of a draft, there was a lot. I was like, whoa, what's going on? What's wrong? I finally had to start kind of watching, like, what's wrong with him? Because I liked a lot of what I saw. The age, I think, is part of that what's wrong with him category, unfortunately. Just because you're older and more mature. But he's not using power. He's just a catch-and-shoot guy. And I was definitely kind of caught my eye, I would say that. And then the other thing that caught my eye is what I just mentioned to you, that if you kind of go grab him from, you know, January, the last 11 games of his 12 games of his career, he averages 16 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, shoots 46% from 3. You actually can back it up. He had a terrible stretch there, but if you go back to like almost January 1st, he shoots 44% from 3 after January 1st, and that includes a stretch where he goes 0 of 9 in that stretch. So Knockdown shooter. Kyrie Thomas is his name. Final 15 games, he shot 48% from the collegiate three and 71% from two in that stretch. Something intriguing about this kid. I liked him. If he comes in for a workout, I'll be there to watch him closely. Murdoch Chevy. Tyson's the guy over at Murdoch Chevy. Great guy, fun to talk to. Hopefully I'll get to see him tomorrow. We're going to transfer cars. I'm going to pick up a new Chevy. I don't know what I'm going to get. What do you think? So I drove the Silverado truck. It was amazing. And I found out that all these big, tough guys that are walking around being truck guys are totally full of it, because driving the Silverado truck was the most comfortable ride I may have ever driven. I mean, it seriously, I felt like I was in a lazy boy chair and could just sit there for like 8 hours. So I'm kind of fired up. I get to drive a new Chevy coming up. I'm trying to figure out what, I don't ask, but just between me and you, like, I mean, all right, so I could be driving a Camaro. The Colorado truck is pretty sweet. That's a little bit of the smaller one out there. They've got the electric Bolt. Their SUV lineup of the Chevys that they have out there are just great. The Equinox, supercar 2018. The Tahoe and the Suburbans are Chevy signatures, and Tyson's got them for you there at Murdoch. I don't know. If I'm just getting a car for the summer, I could take a Corvette. I mean, that's the signature, right? Oh, it's interesting. I'm excited. I'll find out. I'll tell you guys tomorrow. In the meantime, if you're looking for a Chevy, 91 years in business together, Chevy and Murdoch, a part of Utah's culture. Murdoch Chevy out in Woods Cross. Stop by, say hi to Tyson for me. He'll talk some hoops with you. Good dude. And always fun. He doesn't have any silly golf games like Blake, which is a positive. So check it all out at Murdoch Chevy. Woods Cross, you get the Murdoch guarantee. The car washes for life. Oil changes for life. 5-day price match guarantee. All great things over at Murdoch and the great brand of Chevy, who's just absolutely on fire right now. All right, I'm not an expert in burner accounts. I have like accounts I want to start and do things I think would be really fun. And things like that. Like my favorite Twitter account that I haven't started yet that I want to is called Part of Conversation. It's where you walk by people and you hear like one thing, but I don't think that's what a burner account is. The story that is out of the Ringer is that Brian Colangelo, the general manager, president of the Philadelphia 76ers, had multiple burner accounts where he bad-mouthed players, where he defended himself, where he like interacted with reporters. And then there's some of the interesting things that are out there is like Woj was following one of them. So it's just a weird story. The person who was sending the tweets is either him or someone really close to him, because of just the inside information that's going on. He is out calling everyone and denying it. And it's just a wild story. It then had Joel Embiid out liking all of the Twitter burner account comments that were negative about him. Him then sending messages to the burner accounts criticizing Colangelo and talking about how much better Sam Hinkie is. You then had CJ McCollum firing at Joel Embiid saying, so are you unhappy in Philly? I mean, it last night was, then you had Mark Cuban and Daryl Morey going back and forth about it. It was just insane to see NBA blow up last night. And I don't know. It just was ridiculous. Just kind of awesome. Ooh, before we wrap up today, an NBA mock draft is out. Jonathan Giovanni's latest mock. So he has DeAndre Ayton going 1 to Phoenix. Marvin Bagley going 2 to Sacramento. Jaren Jackson going 3 to Atlanta. Memphis getting Luka Doncic. Why? So what? This guy led Slovenia to the EuroLeague championship, to the EuroBasket championship, and then Real Madrid to the championship, and was the MVP. So all he's done is won, and now we're going to worry about things with him? Boy. Mo Bamba, 5 to Dallas. Trey Young, 6 to Orlando, hired Steve Clifford today. Wendell Carter, 7 to Chicago. This is on Insider, so you're thank you. You're welcome. Michael Porter Jr., 8 to Cleveland. Colin Sexton, 9 to the Knicks. Bridges out of Villanova to the 76ers. Bridges out of Michigan State, 11 to Charlotte. Gilgeous Alexander, 12 to the Clippers with Lonnie Walker. I don't know these guys. We're now out of my knowledge. Robert Williams was a big guy for Denver. Kevin Knox out of Kentucky, 15. Zaire Smith, 16 to Phoenix. Aaron Holiday, 17 to Milwaukee. Troy Brown, 18 to San Antonio. Kevin Herter out of Maryland, some shooting guard, to Atlanta, 19. Keita Bates-Jop to Minnesota in 20. Which would be interesting, because if they do that, it would mean that they're probably letting Bielitsa go, and that's someone we should consider. And then they have us taking Eli Okobo, a versatile guard who can operate in different lines without dominating the ball alongside. So they didn't update their thing, and they talk about how we're drafting Simmons, and they have Okobo there instead. So Jonathan Giovanni didn't quite get his things in line here. Okobo is rocking up the draft board with a very strong end of the season in France, leading his team to the playoffs and having a memorable 44-point game. The smooth guard has physical tools and the ability to pass out of the pick-and-roll sets and makes shots with range pulling up off the dribble. Then another foreign kid goes 22, Chandler Hutchinson, 23 from Boise, Kyrie Thomas, who I talked about today, 24 to Portland. Two-time defensive player of the year, by the way, was Thomas. DeAnthony Melton, 25, USC, the Lakers. Jacob Evans, 26, to Philadelphia from Cincinnati. 27, Georgia Tech's Ogeji, I don't know how to pronounce it, for the Celtics. The Villanova guard that stayed into the Warriors at 28, Jerome Robinson, 29, Brooklyn. Grayson Allen to Atlanta, 30. And then they actually went all the way through with the second round as well. Jazz Devon Hall, shooting guard out of Virginia, who's 22 and a half years old. All right, that is our show today. That is your latest on the mock. We'll just start breaking down those guys. Those are names we're going to know well. I don't know them yet. I have just started my work. And we'll all get to know them well coming up here. We've got a month. Lockdown Podcast Network has a lot of exciting things coming up for you. I will announce more of that for you here when it's official, but there'll be some exciting things if you're a draftnik. All right, have a great one. Thanks very much to the store, 6200 South 20th East, and Murdoch Chevy. Say hi to Tyson when you stop by in Woods Cross.